This is your warlord of weird, Sin Bodhi. Look both ways before you cross the street while you're skating on thin ice carrying scissors. You're listening to The Final Count.
Hi, this is former WWE superstar Kieran Cross, and you're listening to The Final Count.
This is former WWE and TNA Impact superstar Mike Knox, a.k.a. Nux. You are listening to The Final Count. Keep it tuned.
Hey everybody, Anthony Corelli here, formerly known as Santino Morella, and you are listening to The Final Count.
Yo, peeps, you're listening to The Final Count with my boy Ryan right there, bro. So listen, don't forget who's telling you this. It's your boy, Eric.
Hello everybody, it's the Croc Rockin', Nickelback Poppin', Curls for All the Girls, the Perminator, Sam Beal, as seen on Impact Wrestling, and you are listening to The Final Count.
So, wrestling fans, it's that time. It's time for The Final Count. And this week, as my guest, I will be joined by former OVW Ohio Valley Wrestling manager Mo Green. You may also know him as Morris. You may also remember him from being the butler of the APA and also the personal ring announcer for Ernest the Cat Miller. He'll be joining me in just a few moments. But right now, I want to talk a little bit about some pieces of news since we were last with you, since you last heard us on, and you last, since our last episode. I'll just say it that way. So, Sonya Deville and Chelsea Green Chelsea still is, the one half of the WWE Women's Tag Team Champions. So, Sonya Deville has torn her ACL. This report came out by TMZ, so I'm going to go ahead and read this report. WWE Tag Team Champion Sonya Deville reportedly tore her ACL on July 28th during her match against Bianca Belair and Charlotte Flair, and will undergo surgery on Tuesday. This has already passed on Tuesday, according to TMZ Sports. Deville and her tag team partner Chelsea Green won the titles on July 17th against Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez on Raw. A timeline for her return has not been made public, though ACL tears normally carry a lengthy rehabilitation period, often up to a year. A TMZ reported that the WWE will be addressing the future of the women's tag team titles, which that was addressed this past Monday, as I'm recording this today, just last night on Raw. So if you saw Raw, we'll talk about that next week, but if you saw Raw, you know what happened. We'll be talking about that, and I'll get to, when I say we, I'll get to that in a few moments, if you have not already seen our announcement. So we just want to wish Sonya Deville a speedy recovery. And just encourage her not to get discouraged, but just continue to build back and take that time to recover and build back and come back better and stronger, better than ever. Just wanted to give that piece of news. And then there's another piece of news for a happy couple that is engaged, that has just became engaged. So Rhea Ripley and Buddy Matthews, WWE star Rhea Ripley and AEW star Buddy Matthews, have just got engaged within like the past week or so. And so we want to, from the Final Count podcast, want to go ahead and just send our congratulations if they hear this episode and they listen to this by chance. We'll see if they do. You know, I guess we'll see if they do. But I just want to shout out to Rhea Ripley and Buddy Matthews on their engagement and looking for wedding bells ringing sometime in the near future. So, congratulations to the happy couple. And that's the last piece of news as far as in the wrestling world. I do have, if you, again, did not hear or see the announcements from our social media page on Instagram and Facebook. We haven't announced it on Twitter yet. But if you have seen our announcement from this past weekend, you will have seen that we have a new co-host. You'll be introduced to him formally on the next episode. So the next episode you will be introduced to him, and that will be next week. You'll be introduced to our new co-host, and we will be going forward, we'll be going over and reviewing different shows: Raw, SmackDown, AEW, Impact, and possibly LBW. So we're gonna get into a bunch of different areas of different shows and review shows and talk about more than just the news topics that came out and important news out of the wrestling world each week. So be looking out for that. And then on top of our interviews, and that'll be all on one episode, so you won't have to go and listen to it on another episode or listen to it on a separate podcast. It won't be all on the same episode. So I just want to encourage you to come back and check us out. And right now, before we get into the interview, I'm going to throw it to some plugs, plugging our social media, plugging our where you can find us on social media, where you can find us and listen to us on the podcast platforms, all your favorite podcast platforms, including Amazon Music and iHeartRadio, because those are not in the podcast platforms plug right now, which I still have to update. So, yeah, I want to encourage you to stay tuned, and we'll be back with Mo Green. You can find us on social media by going to facebook.com/thefinalcountky on Facebook, and then on Instagram and Twitter at thefinalcountky, and on YouTube you can find all of our past episodes by just typing in the search bar thefinalcountky. Also, I mentioned we are now on more platforms for podcasts, such as Anchor, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, Overcast, Pocket Cast, and Radio Public, and also on iTunes. So be sure to check us out on all those platforms that you can find podcasts on. The Final Count is on all of those platforms that I just mentioned. I want to go ahead and mention that if you go to callandelbowbrand.com and use the promo code Final Count KY, you can save 10% at checkout when you use our promo code, and you will be supporting not only Colin Elbow, but you also be supporting the Final Count and getting merch and all that good stuff. Colin Elbow has good swag. Definitely recommend it. Very comfortable, great fitting swag, t-shirts and shirts. So definitely go over and check out ColinElbowBrand.com. Use the promo code Final Count KY. That's in all caps. And save yourself 10% at checkout, and tell them the Final Count sent you, and say hi to Al Snow. But with more, speaking of Al Snow, with more on ColinElbowBrand.com, with more on Colin Elbow, here is Al Snow.
Wrestling. A love and a passion we all share. I've started a wrestling brand. The wrestling brand. A brand founded on the aspects of wrestling. Two entities working together to create a product that connects emotionally for people everywhere. Collar and Elbow is the brand. Passion and love for wrestling is the drive. I am Al Snow, and this is Collar and Elbow, the wrestling brand.
Art fans joining me now, I'm joined by former OVW High Valley Wrestling manager, Mo Green. How you doing, Mo?
I am well. How are you?
Doing great, doing great. Thank you for joining me on the Final Count this week.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. I don't do these very often, so it was when you asked me about it, I thought, yeah, absolutely, cool. I'm a podcaster myself, so I know what it takes some nerve to ask a stranger to talk to you on the phone or on the computer or whatever. So yeah, man, no problem at all.
For sure. And as a fan, I'm excited about doing this, and as a podcaster as well. So let's go ahead and jump into this thing. When did you decide to get into the pro wrestling business?
I remember telling my dad when I was in high school, I was maybe a freshman or sophomore, I'm about the same size I am now, except skinnier, if that was possible. I remember telling my dad I was going to be a professional wrestling manager one day. And he's like, well, okay, because that's what my dad does. How I got into the wrestling business I'll give you the roundabout story. So I'm from Jeffersonville, Indiana, which is right across the river from Louisville, Kentucky. I got started when the Davis Arena was in Jeffersonville in the Quadrangle. How I got there was my parents had moved to Memphis after I graduated high school. And after I graduated from college, I went down there to live with them. During this time, my dad met a gentleman by the name of Ken Wayne. Do you know who Ken Wayne is?
Oh, yes. The Nightmare Ken Wayne. Yes.
Yes. So I met Ken Wayne. And I'm like, oh my gosh, because I remember watching him on TV on Continental is where I saw him. I saw him and Danny on Continental while I was growing up. And you know, I met him. I was like, wow, he's not that big of a guy. I could get in the wrestling business. So I didn't think anything about it. He offered to train me. I wasn't available. Like, I wasn't mentally or financially available at the time to do so. But we became buddies. And moved to Louisiana. Then I moved back to Jeffersonville. I was going through a real rough mental place. And I was starting to come out of that. And I was like, you know what? I'm only going to live once. F it. I'm going to get in the wrestling business. What's the worst thing that could happen, right?
Right.
So, I called Ken. It's like, okay, look, I want to get in the wrestling business. What do I need to do? He's like, where are you living at right now? Because he knew I had moved. I said, I'm in Jeffersonville. He goes, you're in Jeffersonville? I was like, yeah. He goes, Danny's place is right there. Go see him. No, I kid you not. It was walking distance from the house I was living at the time. It was like a mile from there.
Oh, wow.
No joke. So I walked in, while I was, you know, I saved my money up. It was for the Nick Dinsmore beginner class at the time, or Nick Dinsmore was teaching it. I walk in, plop my money down. I was like, I want to be a wrestler. And that was, and I then just went from there.
That's awesome. So I assume you were a fan growing up, watching wrestling on TV. Was your dad? Did your dad get you into it? Was another family member? Or who got you into it?
It was my grandfather. My grandfather got me into wrestling. He would. It took me a while to get into it too, because I long time ago in the 1900s. I don't know how old you are, but in the 1900s, there was this thing called Saturday morning cartoons. And I grew up watching Saturday morning cartoons on the weekends. I would be at one of my my sibling and I would be at one of my grandparents' house every weekend because my parents needed a break. And at 12 o'clock, wrestling started. And I would, for the longest time, I would watch cartoons, watch Smurfs, all that, and then go outside when wrestling came on. And one day, I sat down and started watching it, and I got hooked. And I mean, I watched everything. There was a time in my life where I watched wrestling every single day, and I watch wrestling every single... Hold on, now my son's in the room. Come here. Every single day, I watched Continental, I watched WWE, I watched NWA, I watched, I watched NWA, I watched AWA, whatever wrestling I could find. I was on it, and it was like that. And when most guys were growing out of it in high school, I was still into it. I didn't stop watching until I actually started dating and got to college.
Oh, wow. So who were some of your inspirations in the wrestling business, like, that you enjoyed watching?
When I was younger, I really liked Macho Man Randy Savage. I was a big fan of Ricky Steamboat. Who else? Jeez. I like Dynamite Kid. Then I got a little bit older. I was a fan, fan of Rey Mysterio, Eddie Guerrero. So that was super cool. Who else? I enjoyed Jerry Lawler. He was the King of Memphis for a reason. Off the top of my head, those are some of the ones. Chris Jericho is another one. Really liked him. The more athletic guys.
All right. That's some great inspirations right there. Did you have any, like, as far as managing, and was Jim Cornette a part of that by any chance?
Yes, he was. Bobby the Brain Heenan is the greatest of all time. He's the GOAT. I think every manager will say that.
For sure.
You'd be hard pressed to find another manager like, oh no, somebody's better than Bobby Heenan. Very difficult. And in my opinion, Jim Cornette's number two. It was really weird. I was a fan of Midnight Express too. They were one of my favorite tag teams. I could go on and on. Anyway, but I liked the Midnight Express as well as a kid. When they were wrestling the Rock and Roll Express and getting beat up by the Road Warriors, and then when Stan Lane showed up with Beautiful Bobby and all that stuff, right? Because Jimmy could run that mouth. And I remember, I remember him saying something about being from Louisville, Kentucky, and going to Mayo High School. Talking about it in a promo or whatever. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm from Louisville. My dad went to Mayo High School. So he made me a fan on accident. Somebody like Jimmy or the good talkers, you can't take your eyes off of them. And he had my attention, and he said that, and it was like, I was like, oh my gosh, I had so much in common. So I love Jim Cornette since. Funny thing is, I went to work for him years later as an adult, and I actually asked him about that promo. He's like, he had no idea what I was talking about, but but it was something that he made up on the fly, and he went with Male High School because it made him sound more offended or something like that. Probably the reason he mentioned Male High School. So I was like, nah, man, that gathered my attention. It was over for you, dude. I was gonna cheer you no matter what.
Oh wow, that's awesome. I love that you shared that story. That's pretty cool. And it hooked you right there too, yeah. So that's really cool. What was your time? What was your training like with Nick Densmore? And what was your training like?
Nick was a very good trainer. He taught me the basics. I will forever be indebted to Nick Densmore because he helped me do something I was surprised. He helped me get to places I was surprised I got to. And he was always in my corner, which I thought was cool because he didn't have to. You know what I mean? Nick is a good dude. I will hear no Nick. There will be no Nick Densmore slander on my watch, sir. Training was like, you came in, you learned the basics. He would teach you the basics, and as you if you showed aptitude, he would show you more. And he'd, I'm lucky he saw something in me, because I got to work with the better guys in my class, which included Chris Cage, I think it was Kaelin Croft, who else? Chris Kay, who was a referee, got hired. Johnny Jeter with, you know, Spirit Squad. Who else? Mark Magnus, he was Muhammad Hassan. He helped guide us, and you know, there was never any jealousy or anything like that that can come up in a business like this. And he was every step of the way, every question I had, he would answer it. You know, it was great. I got a lot of my early matches because of him. He would go to HWA in Cincinnati with Les Thatcher. He'd take me in. Somebody posted this not too long ago, a match between me and Kaelin Croft or Chris Cage. We called him Hitman back then because he looked like Bret Hart. Mm-hmm. And we had matches in Cincinnati, and then he helped us get booked in Memphis. And, you know, anytime he could get us booked, he would take us. It was great. He was awesome.
That's awesome. And I love he got you so many opportunities right there, and that training, what that training did for you. That's awesome. Do you remember your first match you were a part of, whether that's managing or just the first show you were a part of?
Yes, I do, and I'm not sure how much I should tell you. I do not remember who was across the ring. What I do remember is I was wrestling, my tag team partner was a gentleman by the name, who went by the moniker Vivacious Charles. And Charles had been in the amateur class for a while, and he was, you know, safe-ish, you know, good dude, super good dude. Safe-ish, I say safe-ish to be funny. oh boy. Okay, so if you you started watching, and I think you said before we started in like 2004, 2005, right?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay, so you didn't see the old arena.
Correct. Not in person.
Okay. Okay, so as the old arena had three sides to it that you could work, because one side was just a wall. The locker room, I swear, was probably, man, I really wish you could, it was small enough that I don't think Brock Lesnar and Batista could have stood side by side, shoulder to shoulder in that locker room. That's how small it was.
Oh, wow.
I may be exaggerating, but that's what it felt like, because both those dudes were in there, and it was suffocating because they take up a lot of room. So, one thing I learned, one of the things that I love Ken for is he gave me a lot of advice, a lot of it I couldn't take or didn't understand at the time. But he gave me this one tip that I don't know if people get smartened up about, is shaking hands before a show, and you know, being when you're the new guy, you be quiet. That part I knew, but you know, it made sense to me, right? But I got a very stern talking to about, look, you be quiet, you zip your mouth, you sit there and you shut up and you learn. Got it, I can do that. So, we had our match. Match was what it was, you know, every first match is terrible.
Oh, yeah.
We're watching the monitor, and it's like I said, the locker room's small. And so there's a set of benches on one side and a set of benches on the other side, and then maybe, you know, a little walkway in the middle, basically. So it's maybe 10 feet wide. And so I'm sitting across from Charles, and he keeps talking to me while I'm trying to watch the show. And I'm kind of like, okay, cool. And, you know, watch the show, he's talking or whatever. Oh, boy. I'll take the heat for it, screw it. Brock Lesnar said, Brock finally gets fed up because Charles is being loud. And he says, why don't you shut the F up? Charles made the mistake of being comfortable in the locker room because he had been there a while. Like, he had talked to, he'd been around OVW for a while. And he thought he had a good relationship with Brock, so he goes, well, why don't you kiss my...
Oh, no.
And this is my first night in a wrestling locker room. I hadn't been to any other locker room. I hadn't been in an amateur show yet. This was literally my very first time in a wrestling locker room. And I'm with the contract guys, right? I'm on the same show as the contract guys. Brock stands up. Remember how tight this thing is, right?
Right.
He walks over. Remember, this guy, the guy is across from me, right? He turns his back to me, obviously, to face Charles. I can see absolutely nothing. Charles completely disappears. I see a hand come up, and I hear, "Pow!"
Oh, no.
I was like, oh, my God. I was like, oh, my God. Did I just watch a grown man slap another grown man? What have I got myself into? I was shook, man. He slapped the haste out of his mouth. And on top of that, got told to leave the locker room.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I don't know. I doubt Brock remembers that story, but it was funny when I got called up to SmackDown. And I ran across him, and we had a minute. He's like, oh, you're from... He remembered my face, I guess. He's like, oh, you were in OVW. I was like, yeah. It's like, we met up there. He goes, I remember you were there my first night wrestling. He goes, yeah. I go, yeah, you smacked shit at Charles. He goes, oh, yeah, I remember that. He kind of laughs. I was like, oh, my God. What am I into? What is this world? But, yeah, that was my first wrestling.
Wow.
Wrestling experience in the locker room.
Talk about a first experience. Wow.
Yeah, buddy.
That's a good one. And like you said, there's every interview I've done, it never fails. Everyone's first match is always really interesting. Their first show, their first night, whatever it may be, it's always interesting.
Yep. Yeah.
If you could pick three top moments you were a part of as your favorite moments in your wrestling career, what moments would you pick? And I know that's a hard one. If you want to come back to it, we can.
Well, one of them, this will be no specific order. Because, man, there's a lot of stuff. Because it's just like, man, I wasn't even in the wrestling business that long, but there were so many things that happened over that period of time. One of my top memories is being in the Royal Rumble. That was really cool. I really wish Chris Benoit had turned out different, because now my highlight will never be shown on WWE television. There was a moment when I was in the Heartbreaker Run, and it was the three of us, and when we turned babyfaced, and then the crowd turned us babyface, and we started working Eminem, and we did a parody of their intro.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was. Do you want me to spell out like everything that happened in that, or to have people look it up? How do you want me to talk about that one?
However you want.
Okay, so Eminem, Melina, Mercury, and Nitro were fantastic. First of all, they were fantastic to work with. They had an amazing look. I wasn't surprised at all when they got called up and were successful on WWE television. They're great. They had a very elaborate entrance, and they had a paparazzi. Melina would stand on the apron. Johnny would slide in, and then Melina would do the splits that she did, you know, that she made famous on WWE television. She'd slide in the ring. I forget exactly how Mercury buried him. I forgot exactly what he did. And it was a thing. Like, they got extra time for their entrance because it was so good. So, me and the Heartbreakers being us, we decided to parry that in only the way we could. And the planning for this was going to be even more over the top of what I'm about to tell you. So we had people roll out pink carpet. Then we had a belly dancer come out. We had a juggler come out. We had somebody else come out that was utterly ridiculous. Then the Heartbreakers came out. Then I came out with a guy dressed as a banana.
Yeah.
And we did their entrance, and then, you know, we got the promo ready, get stuff cracking. That was one of my favorites. Oh my gosh, that was so much fun. I hadn't thought about that in a long time. I don't know if a lot of people remember, but this was kind of near and dear to me. We were I was teaming with Chris Silvio. He was wearing tie dye, and I was his manager, and we were trying to get our act together, for lack of a better way to put it. And it was right around the time that Tim Tebow was still playing football. He was getting, people were poking fun at him doing the prayer after touchdowns and stuff. So by this time, I was doing, I had the microphone as soon as I was on Music Hit, so I would introduce him and walk him all the way to the ring, talking about random nonsense that we talked about in the locker room. Like, it would be like, "It's Sylvia Clark, get your mama ready," which was a joke line. And he said, "Hey, I want you to get this in," because he would challenge me with really dumb stuff. He's like, "Hey, I want you to get this line in." So I'm like, "All right, cool." And I would just say random stuff, and people were like, "Why did you say that?" I was like, "Eh, whatever. It's wrestling. Whatever works, works." And we got out there. I did some rambling bit about something that was unimportant. And it was like, "And now a moment of silence." And we all got down in the T-bow position. And they're like, "I cannot believe." We got back like, "I can't believe you guys. I cannot believe you guys." Like, "Thank you. Thank you very much. That's great." That was one of my favorites, too.
It's funny going back down memory lane like this, because both of those moments, I remember watching those moments. I remember being there for those moments. So, yeah, that parody of the Eminem entrance was great, and I definitely recommend fans going and finding that on YouTube for sure. What was it like being a part of Bowen Services with Kenny Bowen and countless other talents such as Mike Mondo, Rene Dupree, and the late great Sean O'Hare and Lance Cade?
Oh man, I had a good time. It was fun. I got to come along a little slower because I didn't have to talk. I'll put him over. Kenny can talk, man. Kenny can get you to hate him and do it well and easily. And so I didn't have to talk yet. I got a chance to do what I did best, which was take bumps and, you know, accent and, for lack of a better way of putting it, whoever I was with. Like Renee, like once I got with Renee and was like, "Go get a tuxedo, da da da," it's like, cool. Renee didn't say two words as far as what he wanted me to do. I would just, we never really worked any of that out. I just worked around him. He did his thing, and I did it, and I just reacted to him. It was really Working with Renee was really easy. It was disappointing I got replaced by Fifi the dog. That sucked. because I had a really good time working with Renee. Renee was awesome. I don't remember working a lot of matches with Lance, but Lance was always cool. Like, he was a really cool guy. I always liked him. I always got along with him. Sean O'Hare, I have one match that I can remember with him, and it's one of those funny stories. So, I'm 5'4" and 160 pounds, and Sean O'Hare is enormous. And we had a one-on-one match. How ridiculous, right? So, there's a spot in the match where I duck out of the way before he clobbers me, and I throw a couple hands, back him up, and I rear back and chop him so hard, or as hard as I could. As hard as I could, right? And as soon as I did it, because I was feeling the moment, and I did it, and as soon as I did it, he no-sold it, and I'm like, oh no. And I literally went, aw, shh. Like, the whole crowd was like, yeah, he's dead. I hit the ropes, he takes my head off with a clothesline, and then proceeds to chop me 5 or 6 times and throw me halfway across the ring. After that match, we're in the locker room, and he's like, oh, look how cute. And he pulls his shirt down, or he pulls his shirt up, and my handprint is on his chest, so at least I put a mark on him.
right.
I was kind of proud of that. While I had handprints all over my chest, torso, and low stomach, so I don't know who won that one. Anyway, Lance was awesome. I don't have any specific moments with Lance, memories with Lance. I mentioned Renee. Renee was great. And Mondo's one of my best friends. Mondo's probably my best friend in the business. So we wrestled a lot of matches together that nobody will ever see. We did a lot of practice matches together. Mondo's like my little brother. I'm not like I was happy for him when he made the Spirit Squad. I wish he had got a better could take advantage of more of the exposure, could better take advantage of the exposure he got at ROH, because I thought that was the best version of Mondo. Like, I've said this to anybody who listens, if the ROH version of Mike Mondo was here now, they would be talking about him in the same vein as far as in ring as a Daniel Bryan, as a Kenny Omega, those guys. Like, I wholeheartedly believe that he's still really, really good. Mike Mondo is one of the most underrated wrestlers that, like, bar none. Like, I really wish if Mondo was a little bit younger, he would be right in the mix and people would be talking about him the way they're talking about those other guys. I stand by it.
Oh, I completely agree, for sure. Definitely. And then, while we're talking about Bowling Services, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about Jerome Crony.
I love Crony. Crony was a good dude, man. There was a story about him being a turd. We had a handicap match, if I'm not mistaken, it's on YouTube, against Nick Densmore. And I would jump on him, and of course, you know, we're half his size, so he beats us up. And he grabs us and German suplexes both of us, which was his finish. And when we took it, I think Jerome's something hit my face and like cut my nose, like the outside of my nose, like cut the skin off my nose, like, ah, that hurt, it sucked, you know. And we're talking about it later, he goes, yeah, he had moved and he had made sure that he moved in front of me so he wouldn't have to take the bulk of the bump. But I was like, oh, you, it was one of those, he got me with one of those veteran tricks. I thought it was hilarious. He was fun to work with. We did a parody of the APA, and for a long time, that was the highest rated segment in OVW history.
Oh wow!
Yeah, that was according to Kenny Bone. So I don't know. Jimmy, if I'm not mistaken, Jimmy backed that up, but there was also some caveats to it, but. According to Kenny, and if I remember correctly, it was verified by Jimmy that was the highest segment in the OVW quarter hour OVW had ever had.
That's awesome, and such a great segment too, right there.
Yeah, it was utterly ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous.
It was hilarious. So, now how did your time with WWE come to be?
Okay, so if we were talking about APA, right?
Yes.
So during that little spell, the APA had come down there's all kinds of crazy stories about that. But anyway, APA had come down for injury rehab and to check out and see what people were doing. And for some reason, Bradshaw took a liking to me during all the chaos and the stuff that we were doing with them through Bowen Services and the impersonation of them and all that stuff. Like during one segment, they pinned me. I didn't know this was gonna happen. They pinned me down, like stripped my pants, and they actually kidnapped me on television. And the next time I was shown on TV was at SmackDown.
Wow.
But behind the scenes, it was just one of those serendipitous things. Renee had already been called up, and Bradshaw took a liking to me, during said kidnapping, we're sitting in a truck. He's like, I think I'm gonna talk to Vince, and I'm gonna have you called up. I'm like, what? I'm like, are you serious? I'm like, why? You know, because I didn't think the APA. Butler would need a butler gimmick. It didn't make any sense to me, but I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll do whatever. You know, next thing I know.
Wow. That's awesome.
Very serendipitous. I had some, yeah.
Wow, so kind of like on a whim right there.
Yeah, it was just one of those, the stars aligned, and, he liked what I was doing, and I made him laugh, I guess. So
there you go. Well, at least you got up there. And so, like, what was that like to be the butler of the APA? I believe you were known as Bruce, and then mm-hmm. working with Bradshaw and Farouk, and then after the APA, you would go on to work with Ernest the Cat Miller, and under the name Lamont. Mm-hmm. How was that?
I didn't work with the APA that long. It was fun. I'll go ahead and say this now. I'll mention it later. I wish it had been longer. But, you know, I just went in and did the job, and, you know, I do have one Bradshaw story, but I may save that for later. Because this happened, Ernest the Cat Miller, I remember more, because this was, I can't believe this is almost 20 years ago. The Ernest the Cat Miller run, I remember better. He was a super smart dude. He was fun to be around. He's just funny. One thing I can remember, one story, not necessarily about the cat though, it was something that happened. So during this time we went to, it was like January, it was like, I think it was right before the Rumble. No, was that after? I don't know, doesn't matter. We went to, we're in New Mexico, and because it's 2 hours behind there. I'm not a bar guy. I didn't go out a lot, and because the show was early because of the way time, the way Eastern time works.
Right.
There was the college football championship, on that day, and it was like started at 8 o'clock, and it started 7 or 8, which is, you know, plenty in my bedtime, right? And they're like, you gotta come, you know, you don't come out with us, you gotta come. I'm like, okay, cool, fine. Well, that day I started to get hoarse. My throat started to bother me. And if you missed, the 10 minutes I was on WWE television, I was the announcer for Ernest the Cat Miller. I was the guy with the wig. And so I got there, and who was I with? I think Nitty and Linda Miles were, I was right with them, and we had all sat down, and I was where, you know, the boys are there, you know, Dean Malenko was there, Prince Albert, I think that's what he's going by, Brian Hebner was there, I said Dean Malenko, somebody else, I'll think of it later, and, so it was like I wanted something for my throat. Like I don't drink a whole lot anyway. I'm not opposed to it. It's just not my bag. Mm-hmm. And I think they had hot chocolate there, green tea or something. And I was like, you know what, I'll get a hot chocolate. But, you know, kind of soothe the throat or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And I'm expecting, you know, some Swiss Miss cup, right? So they bring me the hot chocolate. It's in this fancy cup. It's like got 6 inches of whipped cream on it. And I'm looking at him like, are you serious? In front of all these gigantic, you know, alpha male dudes, I'm sitting there drinking this nonsense. I'm like, whatever, it'll help my throat. And I hear, I forgot who said this, but I hear, man, you better hurry up and drink that Bradshaw, I'll be here in a minute. I'm like, you're absolutely right. So I started to drink, and all of a sudden I hear, Morris, you son of a... And I'm like, oh no. And he sits down at the table next to mine, and he goes, Morris, we're going beer for beer tonight. Now, Bradshaw's, what, 6'5", 6'6"? At the time, this was before the JBL gimmick, so he was, I don't know, close. He was probably 3 bills, right?
Oh, yeah.
I am 5'4" and 160 pounds, and Bradshaw drinks almost every night on camera. And I am a 5'4", 160 pound dude who doesn't drink hardly at all. And I'm about to go beer for beer with this man. I am lucky to be alive today. And this will be the first time I've actually told this story out loud, where people can recall, where Bradshaw may actually hear this. How I survived that story, because I did go beer for beer with him. Went one beer. Bradshaw drinks one. Bradshaw downs two. Bradshaw downs three. I finally get my first one down. Bradshaw gets four. Bradshaw gets five. I get my second one down. And he's like, you gotta catch up. I'm like, oh my God, okay. So I get up to about six. Again, I don't drink much, so I'm good. I head to the bathroom. I see my waitress coming. I stop her. I go, you want to make extra money on tip tonight? She goes, sure. I go, I hand her my bottle. I go, keep this, every time I order a beer, keep this filled with water. She goes, okay. So Bradshaw just kept drinking and drinking. And I had been drinking water the rest of the evening. So the next day, I go into the locker room. I mean, I got a little bit of hangover. I still got kind of buzz because I still drank too much. And I hear people whispering, oh my gosh, he's not selling it. Did you hear that? Man, he drank with pressure all last night. He's not selling it. I'm like,
that's great.
That's the first time I've ever told that. I've told that story to a couple other people who've heard it, but that's the first time I've told it to anywhere where in public where somebody might, where you may actually hear it.
Wow. That is awesome. That's funny.
One more thing. I know Bradshaw's got a bad reputation with some people, and I can understand where some of that comes from. I will say he has always been good to me. And as a matter of fact, the last time they were in Louisville this past year, I guess it was last year, I actually almost got on WWE television last year because they were going to use me for like a Baron Corbin skit or something. So even 20 years has passed, he still, you know, tried to get me on, man. I can't complain. You know what I mean? He's been good to me. So I've been very lucky when it comes to wrestling business, for real.
That would have been awesome, and I love that you shared that too, because people do hear stories and they get that he's got this reputation, that reputation. But I like that you shared that for sure. How did you find out that WWE was not going to use you continually on the main roster?
It's not a very glamorous story. It was they just said, you know, we're not going to need you. Howard Finkel called me and said, like, you know, we're not going to be bringing you up. I'm like, bringing you back. I'm like, well, okay. I mean, it was. It's weird hearing Howard Finkel. Howard Finkel for me is like the voice of WWE.
Yeah.
And so it was weird talking to him like on a business level. But yeah, that kind of sucked. But I mean, that's what it was.
Right. And so from then you would go back to, I assume you would go back to WWE. Mm-hmm. And then how did you find out you would be the manager for the Heartbreakers? And was there ever any mention of bringing you back up to the main roster when the Heartbreakers became the Heartthrobs and they went up to the main roster?
How I wound up with the Heartthrobs? Jimmy was brainstorming, and he figured out a gimmick for Romeo and Antonio, and he wanted me to manage them. He wanted Morris to manage them. And he's like, you know, the whole story was I hit the lottery and I decided to break off from Bowling Services because I had my own money and I was going to have my own team and I was going to do my own thing, basically. And he's like, yeah, we can have you back in the tux, da da da. I was like, and when he told me that he wanted me back in the tux, I was like, I sat and thought about it. I was like, one, I had some issues wearing the tux anyway. But you know, you do what you're told. But if you come up, I also figured out if you come with a better idea, Jimmy will go with it. So I sat and was like, okay, how can I get out of this tuxedo? I know if Morris really won the lottery, like if I won the lottery, I'm definitely never wearing a tuxedo again. If I got guys working for me, I'm gonna wear a flashy suit. Not Damon, but Damon and Smoke Green will wear something flashy and outlandish. Like, look at, I would look like what a poor person thinks a rich person looks like. And so I bought the big yellow suit that was way too big, and you know, the fake jewelry and all that stuff, and it actually fit the aesthetic of the Heartbreakers better than what Jimmy had originally invented. So that's how we wound up getting together. When they got called up without me, I've had a feeling it was going to happen, but it was still disappointing. It was funny. There was no really talks of bringing me with the Heartbreakers. I had more than one of the boys go, I don't understand. You are the glue that made that thing that you were. It would have been like the equivalent of that time period would have been like they tried to replace. I don't know if anybody knows this. Nitro and Eminem was a. Eminem worked because of Joey Mercury Matthews. And they were going to try to replace, they wanted to replace, Joey wasn't under contract. They wanted to replace him with Chris Cage, or is that name again? Or Caitlin Croft. So they wanted Caitlin Croft, Melina, and Joey, Johnny Nitro. Thankfully, cooler heads prevailed. They went on, they had massive success. But they thought I was expendable of the three of us. So why pay three people when you can pay two? So that's kind of how that worked out.
Oh wow. So That's interesting about Chris Cage. I did not know that about that and the whole Eminem thing too.
That was the rumor. I never got that to confirm. Was the rumor.
Yeah, that's very interesting though. And then from a fan's standpoint, I was always thinking like, well, why didn't Mo get caught? Why didn't they call him up with him? Like you said, you were the glue to the Heartbreakers, Heartthrobs. And from a fan's standpoint, when they got caught up, it was almost like it wasn't the same. Like, it really wasn't the same. There was things that were similar, but it wasn't really the same as OVW, as when they were in OVW. Like, most things aren't when they get caught up to the main roster. But that's neither here nor there. But in what ways had OVW changed when you returned to OVW in 2011, I believe it was? And then in what ways did it stay the same as it was before you left?
The guys got younger. It stayed the same because Danny was running the ship. At any organization, this is not any kind of universal truth. This is just the gospel according to DeMond. Organizations reflect the person that's really in charge. And because Danny was in charge when I was there the first time, and he was in charge when I came back, it really felt the same. The guys were less experienced because there weren't WWE contract guys there. FCW had opened it by this point, so it was closer to what people would call an indie. But the style was still very, southern, a southern style. I don't know how else to explain it. It's very Memphis, as some would say. The things that get over here are more character driven things versus like someplace like New York or out east where they like action. If that makes any sense.
That's for sure.
Those were the only differences. I mean, the differences were the guys. I mean, it was still the same place. It was still run, Danny was still in charge, so it was run the same way.
Definitely, definitely, for sure. Now, who have been some of your favorite people to work with in your manager role?
In my manager role, really enjoyed my time with Renee. I don't think I picked his brain enough when we were together. Who else? My time with Chris Sylvia was probably my favorite time creatively because that's the most confident I'd ever been on the microphone. And so I literally could go out there and say whatever to get people mad at me, and do my best to entertain the people. So I liked working with them. The Heartbreakers is probably my favorite. As far as OVW goes, the Heartbreakers is probably my favorite. As far as, again, we're talking about me being a manager. I had a good time with Bowling Services. Matter of fact, Rocco is wrestling at Derby City now. And I went I went to Derby City anyway because I'm friends with Gilbert, and I was like, oh my gosh, Rocco's working. And I went to the back locker room after the show, and he would jump over his whole thing he still does it. He'll jump over the top rope, to show off his agility and stuff. And so I would always be in the ring before he did it. And every time he jumped over the top rope to land in the ring, when he hit, I would jump up off the ground like he shot me in the air. So when I saw him at Derby City a few months back, he was like, oh, and he runs over and he jumps and jump. He does the jump and then I jump up in the air. It was really funny. at, I don't know, you might probably want to cut that. I don't know how entertaining that is. But I had a lot of fun. I could probably name people, everybody that I had a good time, that I had some kind of memory with. I probably wrestled Mock Mondo more than anybody else I wrestled just about. I've been beat up by, I've been beat up by 8 WWE World Champions, former WWE World Champions. That's my claim to fame. Those are probably the ones that stick out the most. I can't think of anybody. I mean, I enjoyed working with Cat. He was great. I was lucky to work with the APA. I got to share the ring. I was in WWE for basically a cup of coffee, and I got to share a ring with Vince McMahon. How many people get to do that? I really have nothing to complain about. It was great.
That's awesome. I love that. And I love that, like you said, you weren't in the business very long. You didn't have a long career, but you had a great career, I feel like. Now, how did you come up with the name Mo Green and Mo Money Associates?
The short answer for Mo Money Associates was that was Jimmy's idea. Where Mo Green came from, it was one of those weird moments of inspiration, because he was like, Morris, the butler's name, my butler name was Morris, and I was just being silly, but I'm like, I won the lottery, so I got Mo Green. I was like, wait a minute, that's genius. Green is a last name, that makes sense. So I became Mo Green, because when it's time to get paid, you need Mo Green.
Mo Green,
so that's what it was.
There you go. I like that. Now, did you prefer working as a heel or a babyface?
Honestly, I didn't mind either. I was probably a better babyface, but I didn't really mind either. I liked doing both. And honestly, there are advantages and disadvantages to both. I mean, as a heel, you can experiment more. And you can mess, and when you mess up, it's fantastic, because that means you want to be the butt of the joke anyway. You know what I mean? Not in a ha ha, not threatening way, but when you make people rile people up, and then you slip on a banana peel, that you get a little your comeuppance. So, as a babyface, I don't know. I smile a lot. I genuinely enjoyed being in the ring and being around it. So part of that is just me coming through, just me and my actual joy of doing what I'm doing coming through. And I had a hard time hiding that. So being a babyface was easy, because I genuinely liked being there. I genuinely liked doing what I did. I was like, this was I was living a dream, man. Most of the time I knew, and I didn't appreciate as much as I should have, but I knew how lucky I was to be there, and I enjoyed it.
And that's the thing, that you have to enjoy it, you have to love what you do, and it showed in your work for sure. It showed that, you loved to do what you were doing, you were having a good time doing it too. Now, when you returned to WWE, how did you find out you would be managing Mr. Media, Cliff Compton?
I had no intention of coming back to OVW. There was a friend of mine, Jen. Hey, Jen, if you happen to hear this, you're the bestest. Friend of mine she's a Ring of Honor fan, and she's like, will you come to the Ring of Honor show with me? I'm like, he's like, I'll pay. He's like, you want to go to the Ring of Honor show with me? I'll pay your ticket. I'm like, oh, well, sure. I'm like, okay, but take one out, right? I hadn't seen the show in ages at that point. And Jim Cornette was the one who orchestrated ROH coming to Louisville. So I go in, you know, get the ticket, and I'm walking through. I was like, oh, this is a nice line. I'm not thinking anything about it. I hadn't seen Jimmy since he left WWE in 05. I hadn't seen him in ages. And even if you remember me, I didn't think he'd give a shit. Really care, you know what I mean? He seemed, you know, he had the big four right before I got there, like a manager that was there that was in the WWE for 15 minutes, Desiree on the radar, right? The big four being John Cena, Batista, Brock Lesnar, and Randy Orton. And so I was just gonna slide on by. I was like, oh, that's Jimmy, cool. And I was just gonna slide on by, and I hear, yes! I'm like, and I turn around, and Jimmy's like, oh, come here, and he's like, arms wide open, like, oh, cool. So he gives me a hug, and he's like, how are you doing? You know, we're talking. He goes, I'm coming back to OVW, and I need some talent. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I need some talent. You want to come back to OVW? I'm like, sure. So he told me the whole idea for the Mr. Media Cliff Compton thing, and off we went.
And that was quite a run you had with Cliff Compton. And then from Cliff Compton, you went to be a part of, and correct me if I'm wrong, Boland Services 2.0. Man, what was that like?
It was a different dynamic because Chris was now, you know, the leader of Boland Services, and he, like his dad, can really talk, and even being around it, I'm all over the place. I felt like that time period I was there to help Chris get better with some of the things that he didn't know, you know, like he knew, like he has an innate understanding how to get heat. He knew how to get people over. There were smaller things like in ring things that he did not know, like when to mess with the fans and when not to, things like that, smaller things that just he just didn't think about, you know. It's like, hey, and he was always super cool, because I'd be like, hey, we need to do this and this, and I was kind of like I would kind of direct traffic, you know. It was weird for me to say I was a veteran, but I was a veteran, and we'll try to help, you know, get pieces in place where we need to do things. And I was the bump taker again. Matter of fact, Moose almost kicked my face off one time, and it was to hear the crowd got real quiet before once I hit the ground, and then once they saw me, I wasn't dead, they're like, ah! But it was a good time. That's when I met Rocco. Moose was great. We wrestled against Mondo. I completely, you know, for some reason that a lot of that stuff, until you brought it up, I completely forgot about.
I have to ask you this. Original Bowling, say they were to have a battle between the original Bowling Services versus Bowling Services 2.0, which version stacks up best?
Trying to get me beat up, dude. As far as I'm only using how the people that came through and where they went after Boland Services, not necessarily their time in Boland Services. This is the only way I can. This is the only way I can get out of this. Have this answer and not catch a bunch of unnecessary grief. But Boland Services 1.0 probably dog walks Boland Services 2.0 only because, you know, you had Lance Cade, who had multiple tag team runs. You had Mark Henry, You know who that guy is. You had Sean O'Hare, who was a killer. You had John Cena was in it. Rico was there. Renee went. There's a lot. The guys that were in 1.0 were in a better position to have more success. And historically, I guess. So I would have to go with 1.0 for that reason. But I enjoyed my time with both sets. So.
Oh yes, and no, I definitely would agree. Both brands of Bowling 2.0 or of Bowling Services. They both had their uniqueness and everything about them, and so I think it would be a good match if you were to have like a 6-man tag. I think it'd be a good match, and you know, it'd be good to see for sure, and to see which one came out on top. How did you find out you would be managing Chris Silvio?
He asked me. he asked me, and I felt like I was becoming a second wheel, third wheel, whatever, an extra wheel with Bowling Services. And he had an idea with what he wanted. You know, he did start that gimmick took a couple different evolutions as we began to work together. But at the very beginning, he was like, I want you to be my manager. I want you to talk me out. I want, you know, like, flamboyant. You do you, and I will do me, and we will figure this out, you know. But yeah, he wanted to work with him. And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? Like, his gimmick of what he was pitching was right up my alley. It's very over the top and colorful and bright and look at me kind of thing. So, yeah.
And I have to say, I loved how y'all would spell his last name. Y'all would spell S-I-L-V-I-O. I loved that, and the fans got along with it and everything, so I really loved and enjoyed that.
That was a good time. Absolutely, that was a lot of fun.
And then so let's say you were to come back, just hypothetically, is there a promotion that you would come back to? Like, just if you could make a comeback, just, you know, just as a play, what would be your ideal return?
Well, I'd make the most money in WWE. I actually still know people there. I think if given enough, I don't know how to explain it. With the right situation, I think personally I would do best in AEW. As far as the national promotions, I would do better in AEW. They have more managers there, and I honestly think if you put me with the right people, I could get them over. Like, I chomp at the bit of I would love to manage Powerhouse Hobbs. I would love to manage Powerhouse Hobbs. He has absolute money, and it frustrates me that he is not getting on screen better treated. That might be changing soon, but that also a perfect. I wish these guys had more experience. Private Party. When I saw them for the first time, I'm like, Mo Green needs to be with them. That's who. if Mo Green was going to fit anywhere in AEW, it would be Private Party.
I could see that.
I love those guys. That would be complete with confetti toss and everything. Are you kidding? And also, Gilbert Corsi runs DCW. Gilbert Corsi's a family friend. And there's nothing talked about or anything like that. But the possibility of me coming back with most likely be at DCW Derby City, which has a show. They take four shows. They record once a month, and they take four shows that night. Four 1 hour shows. And I think I could do really well there, and I think I could help as a locker room presence, as somebody who's made all the mistakes that they've all made. To, you know, help the new guys, you know. And it'd be good to see guys like Elijah Burke again, and you know, Dylan Bostic, who was just a wee little baby last time I saw him. And he's working there, and you know, Ted McNaylor's there. You know, so I feel like I would fit in there. So those were, you know, those any of those three spots would be pretty awesome.
That would definitely be pretty cool to see if those panned out and if those were to happen. You know, who knows? Only time could tell and everything. How can fans find you on social media?
I am Devon Does, all one word, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I call myself the sensei of 17 syllable silliness. Because I record dad haiku. I tell dad jokes in haiku form, and I record them. So I do the In the Poetry Corner. I am the producer of a podcast, In the Stacks, the Library Podcast, with the Jeffersonville Township Library, with one of my friends graduated high school with. She's an assistant librarian, so I've been helping her with her show. Those would be the places to find me.
At
Devon Does it on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.
That's the short answer. All right, sounds good. And fans, I definitely encourage you to go and check out, go and check him out on all his social media and everything. And go, you know, tell him hi if you've watched OVW, if you were a fan of OVW, or if you've seen him in WWE. I know it's been like almost 20 years, but like still. If you've seen him, go check him out. Go look up his stuff on YouTube, and you'll be definitely entertained, and you won't be upset that you checked it out, for sure. But I want to thank you, Mo, for coming on the show, and you're welcome to come back anytime, sir.
Well, thank you very much. Like I said, I've been in the ring with the longest reigning SmackDown champion, the first black NWA World Heavyweight Champion, been beat up by eight WWE, former WWE champions, and got to share the ring with the architect of all this in a very short span. And now I'm on a wrestling podcast. I consider myself very lucky, and I'm grateful that you asked me to be on. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you. There you have it, fans. That is my interview with former OVW Ohio Valley Wrestling manager Mo Green. And again, I'd like to thank Mo for coming on the show. But right now, it's time to announce next week's guest. Next week, right here on the Final Count, I will be joined by current ROW Reality of Wrestling champion Matty Ice. That's right, Matty Ice will be right here on the Final Count next week. So don't you dare miss it. Come back next week. And again, I want to thank you for all your support. Thank you for likes, shares. Thank you for all your follows on our social media pages, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or the Big X as it's called now. And then on TikTok, we're now on TikTok. You can find us on TikTok at the Final Count KY. Check us out on TikTok. Go give us follows, share our stuff, and support the Final Count. And I want to thank you for also supporting us on WWE Shop. You can now click our link on WWE Shop, and you can be supporting the Final Count. I want to encourage you to do that. Go grab yourself some merch, some good swag from WWE Shop, and support the Final Count. And tell WWE Shop that the Final Count sent you. But for now, as I say every week, we will see you down the road.